You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 590, with Joey Alaniv, Joey of Malportado Kids, Joey of Downtown Boys. Let's roll. And we are here. First of all, Joey D, me Paizan. How are you doing? Thanks for coming on the Punk Podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me, John. It's nice to see you again.
I think all the listeners probably know who Joey is, but Joey rocks. Joey has got a bunch of really cool projects. Joey was in Downtown Boys, which had three people often say two albums, but Downtown Boys actually had three albums because that critical first one is often seen as a demo. But I would argue, actually, Joey, you can sell this right now. The very first Downtown Boys release that I bought from you as a handmade CDR at Downtown Boys at Lava Space in Philadelphia. Is that an album or is that a demo?
That's an album. That's a rare item you have that we probably handmade in our bassist basement at some point. But no, that's a record. You know, we made that really before we were performing much anywhere in our friend's basement, Cranston, Rhode Island. And yeah, I mean, see, it's actually, you can get it in vinyl now. They're friends at Gutter Pop Comics in Buffalo, New York, made into a vinyl. Stephen Floyd of the band Mall Walkers and other stuff, who's a fantastic person, made into vinyl. He's putting out the Leneve EP as a 7-inch as well right now. But yes, I will argue it's a true record album.
And Joey, with a fantastic segue into the current project, La Neve, which has a double 7-inch coming out real soon, and also a physical reissue of the last full album, The Vital Cord, and that's coming out real soon on, is it 1% Press is the label, or what's the exact label?
Yeah, so it's 1% Press. They do like comic books and a bunch of other stuff. They call their music division Radical Empathy Records. But it's that same kind of crew of folks in Buffalo, New York who do a lot of great stuff up there. And they have a physical store, Getter Pop Comics, up there.
So La Neve is Joey's, I guess I'll call Joey's dance punk project or dance punk band, and they are really fantastic. I've seen them. I saw Joey solo live, but I think sometimes you it's a full band, correct?
Yeah, I've been playing with a drummer late. Like, I can't remember if we had Karn in Philly that night. Maybe not. But in any event, yeah, I've been playing with Karn Array, who also plays in the Caminas and some other great bands. So initially, it was just me doing it live. I'd play keyboards, guitar with some backing tracks. It was kind of like drag, you know, original music thing, but we've added a drummer. I'll play guitar, so there's more live elements. It really kicks it up a lot and makes it a lot more fun. Now Karn is really fantastic, and he's on the new record as well. We kind of blended the drum machines and stuff with his live drumming, and he's an incredible drummer, so it adds a lot.
So tonight we are going to be talking a lot about Joey's La Neve band, which is far out high energy, and I dig it a lot. But also, we're here with M. Moore. M. Moore, what's happening?
Working on lots of stuff, lots of spinning plates, trying to make sure none of them fall.
M. Moore's got a bunch of cool interviews coming up at Punk News, so stay on the lookout for those. And actually, by the time you hear this one, actually might not have, should we say who it's with, M. Moore, or is it top secret until tomorrow?
It's with Ash Sticks and Tyler Fieldhouse of Guilt. So
that's going to be at Punk News around on Friday afternoon. And we're also with Hallie Bullet. Yeah. Hallie Bullet, what's happening?
Nothing. I mean, a lot. You know, I'm hosting a Earth Day event in my neighborhood. So I'm like surrounded by like information about composting and inspirational images. So I don't know. I'm very excited about it. But also it's like a big event and I'm co-hosting it. So I'm a little, I got some nerves. I just need it to go smoothly. And I need to convince a lot of people to compost.
Well, I mean, like, what could go? You think people would revolt because, like, maybe hypothetically, your Earth Day party is so bad they'll like trash your house or something? They'll be like, "This is the Earth Day party we signed up for," or like, "What's going
to
happen?"
No, listen, it's not that interesting. I'm trying to launch a local composting like program, and if I don't get like 30 households signed up, I don't know if I can make it happen. So it's just the pressure's on, you know, pressure's on to save the planet, people.
Do you compost at your house, like for your own house?
I collect the compost here and then I go and I drop it off somewhere else so that I don't have to have like, I don't know exactly what to do with it, but I eventually I'd like to be doing the composting here, but I don't know. For listeners, if you're like, I think composting involves like, you know, having to have like a bucket of worms on your counter or whatever people's concept is, there are, depending on where you live, it is possible that you could just collect your compost in a nice, neat little thing and then just go let someone else deal with it. That is actually an option in a lot of places. So
the plan was to talk about Joey tonight, but I think we should just focus on compost.
You know, my mom. Aren't you glad you asked me what I was doing? What I was up to?
I compost. I just have a big plastic bin kind of right behind my apartment. I'll just throw everything in there. And then I put on my, I have no idea if I'm doing it right. It's not like getting hot like I think it's supposed to, but I put it on my plants outside. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Can't hurt.
It can't hurt. It definitely can't hurt.
I think if it disintegrates, then you're doing it right. So, you know, yeah. At any rate, Joey, listen, I've got an important question to ask you. Earlier today, or late last night, Mike Tyson was on a plane, and some drunk guy was bothering him and kept asking him for autographs. And eventually, Mike Tyson freaked out and hit the guy like 3 or 4 times. He didn't bust him up that bad, but he hurt him a little bit. The question is physical violence ever acceptable, and in what circumstances?
That's a tough question to start with. A fair question. You know, I think probably for Mike Tyson, that was the wrong move. You know, the guy asking for his autograph should probably know not to pester Mike Tyson too much. But, you know, I'm going to go with one of the Supreme Court answers and say I can't really answer such a broad question without more context, you know.
I think that's
fair.
Yeah.
Well, then here's another broad question for you. La Neve certainly has elements of pop music in it. Is pop music inherently apolitical, or can pop music be extremely political?
I think it depends on what we're talking about when we say pop music. You know, there's a sense in which pop just means, like, you know, anything that's not classical music. There's a sense where pop means things with pop elements. There's a sense where pop means, you know, stuff that is put out by the three major corporate record labels. It has a particular sheen to it. You know, conceptually as a genre and as like a sound or set of sounds, I think, you know, anything can have a politics to it. I think if we're talking about what is currently being put out by our ever more consolidated recording industry, I think they're certainly trending toward depoliticizing music, making music less and less interesting every year, giving us, you know, 10 artists overall to listen to for everyone in the population. But, you know, I think that's probably, regardless of genre, you could say that's true of whatever these big labels are putting out with rock music or punk or, you know, whatever the hell it is. So for me, it's the kind of economics of it that's probably what's depoliticizing it more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I like about La Neve is it's got kind of the high energy dance. Not every track, but a lot of tracks have the high energy dance beat. But there's extreme, I mean, honestly, like, I'm not trying to diss people, but if you look at bands on like Fat Records or I'm not trying to diss anybody, you know, Epitaph, like, it's kind of political a lot of times, but it's not really that political. And it's quote punk, where Joey isn't scared to put, like, you know, a straight up 80s dance beat and then have a song like Rough Music, which is extremely political. And it talks about a concept of a unconditional cop. So I guess my first question is, Joey, what is an unconditional cop? Because I wasn't sure.
Unconditional cop? You know, I don't think a lot of lyrics have a super literal concept here. Rough music is a word or a term that refers to kind of like medieval ritual where they would shame a powerful person in town and like have a sort of parade through the town, either burning this person effigy or sort of like mocking them in a certain way. And, you know, you see, we don't have recordings of this, but according to what people wrote about it, would like play music that, you know, was really like harsh, like kind of like, you know, medieval noise music, sort of mocking this person. So this is kind of like protest image. So probably somewhere in there is thinking about, yeah, you know, police, putting police on this kind of pedestal that our country does of unlimited power and no accountability, and the sort of need to you know, attack that with protests, which, you know, very much what most of us were out doing where I was writing a lot of this stuff in 2020.
I don't know how connected you feel to your Italian roots, or connected or not connected. But Italy is very proud of its traditions, or Italian people, in my perspective, have been very proud of their traditions. Mm-hmm. You just did a very interesting thing going back to medieval Europe, which sounds extremely medieval European, walking around town burning effigies. Yeah. How important is history to you and preserving tradition? And I guess what I think is very interesting, and I didn't even know about this, you're talking about rough music and shaming people in high power. You're continuing this tradition, whereas maybe more, quote, people interested in history or tradition would be promote or have a more sanitized version of this, like that. Like if you saw like a documentary, like the Italian culture, they wouldn't show like people like burning like rich dudes like in the street. They'd be like, look at how nice these cannolis are. You know what I mean? So I guess, do you feel a duty to preserve real tradition, if you will, or more subversive tradition?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily about, I don't think it was preserving tradition, but those traditions are there, you know, and a lot of people have written about this, that, you know, when you think about like Western civilization or European culture, as it's kind of promoted by the right wing, it's the great men, it's the powerful people, it's the colonizers, etc. But simultaneously, of course, this is, you know, big history grand history in Europe, as well as anywhere you look, of people resisting, of people fighting, of people, you know, working back in all of these ways. So, you know, I in one of my other lives, I work in museums here and kind of do history and try to do this more kind of radical local history stuff. There's a lot of what I'm reading. And so I'll take phrases, words, inspiration from that stuff I'm reading and talking about, because I think it intersects really well with how I think about our current world and understanding our context. You know, in terms of Italian stuff, right? Lanette is my middle name, right? It's my mom's maiden name. It means snow in Italian, but it's like actually part of my name. So I decided I'd use that for the project. Just to give one example of this stuff, right? When we were recording this record with a producer named Marco Buccelli in kind of like slightly upstate New York. He's from Naples, and we talked a lot about kind of more radical Italian history while we were recording this, because we're both kind of interested in this, and he's from Naples. We've talked a lot about Italian unification and how some of the Italian heroes that there's streets named after them in every city, every little Italy in the U.S., like Giuseppe Garibaldi, how Garibaldi, for people in the south of Italy, Naples, is not this kind of great liberator and unifier of Italy. It was actually a colonizer. And from his perspective, right, for folks in Naples and from Marco's point of view, right, it was unification was about the north sort of invading the south of Italy. So is what I'm getting as even in these places we think of as being sort of like solidified in a certain power, right? There's always people, you know, pushing back and fighting against it.
Building off that, when people think of La Neve and Downtown Boys, they're like very political. Do you ever get tired of getting hit with political questions about, you know, the foundation of the current democratic system? Do you just want to talk about like Batman sometimes or something? Or are you always happy to talk about, you know, the horrors and whatnot of the modern capitalist and democratic system?
I mean, sometimes I just want to talk about the music, right? I mean, I think like with Downtown Boys and our experience with the press, you know, I think it was rare that we got to talk about just being a band or just playing music. I think, you know, not directed at me, but directed at singer Victoria, for instance, there's a lot of, you know, questions directed at her and asking her to explain things that would not have been, you know, asked, for example, to you know, white male lead singers, right? The ability of certain bands to just kind of be like guys having fun and, you know, being crazy, and they get to kind of project that image and not have to explain themselves very much. You know, I'm not necessarily saying I want to do that, but, you know, sometimes you do just want to talk about music. At the same time, of course, the work that I do with organizing and the stuff that I'm putting in my music, you want to talk about, right? You're trying to like project and project these views and talk about them and publicize them, get them out there, get people involved in things, etc. So always happy to take whatever opportunity you have in the press to talk about things. But yeah, you know, sometimes you put a lot of effort into just making your music and making your songs. And you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, Joey is one of, I actually think this is understated, is Joey's one of the baddest ass guitarists out there. I mean, you compare the riffs on Downtown Boys or even the sound, it stacks up against like Danger House or any like first wave, like the Germs, any first wave punk band. Like Joey's got that like super first wave, like snap, but like that raw, like unprocessed sound, which is fantastic, which is doubly interesting because a big part of La Neve is electronic. What attracts you to the electronic side? Because you are a guitar wizard.
Well, thank you. I don't think I'm really a guitar wizard. I think some of that, maybe if I'm approximating that sound at all, is because I also don't know what I'm doing. Like I think a lot of those people did, didn't know what they were doing. But, you know, I like dance music. I've always liked dance music. If I'm going out somewhere dancing, I want to be hearing house or I want to be hearing industrial. That's what I like to kind of like, party with, and it's a lot of what is inspiring to me. So I've always kind of like wanted to get more into that universe of house and industrial and disco and techno and kind of like fuse those elements. But I think at the same time, I don't know what I'm doing with that either. So it also ends up being like also kind of punk again. And, you know, I play guitar in a lot of these tracks, especially the new record does have a lot more guitar, and we do it live. I'll play guitar a lot. So kind of, you know, combine the elements, but still like using the guitar in some places, but sometimes I get a little bit bored with the guitar, and you know, you want to get get into other territory.
What are some of your house and industrial reference points?
On this one, I think I was getting really into like the digital hardcore stuff. I was listening to a lot of kind of like Atari Teenage Riot and that universe of music that was coming out in the early 90s, which was, you know, really politicized then, was both aesthetically really forward and also extremely politicized, although lead singer Atari Teenage Riot has kind of taken a weird like libertarian bent that I'm not super into, but at the time, right, they were making really cool statements and making really cool music. You see some of that coming back, I think, with some of the like harsher like hyper pop stuff and like Machine Girl and then this sort of music that's coming out now. I think you see a return of some of this digital hardcore stuff, but I think it's notably kind of like depoliticized and just kind of like more like surrealist now, which is great. You know, I love that stuff too, but maybe trying to I don't know, reestablish some of the original political bent of that music.
I don't know if you have a perspective on this. This is an obscure question, but I'm interested in it. It is, you know, in England with the early industrial stuff and the house stuff, there was like that weird scene with like Current 93 and Psychic TV and Death in June, where it's like we're not even like sure where these people are coming from. I mean, are you familiar with any of that stuff? Do you follow any of that stuff?
Not super well. I mean, I know Psychic TV, of course, and got to see Genesis here in Providence before she passed away, which is really incredible. So, you know, I know Psychic TV, Thrive and Gristle, that stuff. I can't say. I can talk a lot about those other bands.
Yeah, fair enough. What's your opinion on streaming? Do you think it's cool or do you think it's ripping off artists?
I think as a technology, it's not necessarily ripping off ours. It doesn't need to be a bad thing, but as it currently structured, like everything else, it's like, you know, the three labels and a few tech companies dominating it. And so, you know, it is ripping off artists. And, you know, we made this organization over it's 2020 called Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, where we launched this Just as a Spotify campaign, which is the biggest kind of like collective campaign against a streaming service, and we're, you know, demanding they pay us at least a cent per stream, among other things. So, you know, it's streaming. I think it would be a misguided fight for us to get out there and say, hey, stop streaming, right? That like just fighting against the technology doesn't work, but, you know, we need to break up these monopolies. They're not paying us enough. They're, you know, Spotify's value tripled over COVID while all of us musicians were out of work, not making any money, right? So there's a lot of money in this industry. There's a lot of money in streaming. It's got to get it to band somehow.
Yeah. I was wondering if you, like, just because I was, like, I loved Downtown Boys, and I don't know if you remember, but I was on Gethard's show when you guys played, it was, we had so many good bands come through there, but that performance was just, like, really something.
It was so fun.
Completely, it's on a show where so many things felt really... I don't know, out of control and completely berserk in an absolutely, like, perfect, beautiful way that just it, you guys musically just were it, so much of what they were trying to do with like the actual comedy on that show. This just feeling of something being almost totally out of control, but not quite. Yeah. I just with the new stuff, I just like, I love it. I especially love Rough Music. I think it's so, I think the track is killer. And I'm so curious to know, just as a creator, are you, does it put you in a different, the music couldn't, it's so different from what you were making. Does it just put you in a different like headspace? Just walking around having been making this music, is it just like you're a creative person and when you are creative, it gives you a particular feeling, or does it feel, do you know what I'm asking? Like, do you feel different making this music?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first of all, thank you. I'm really glad to hear that also stuck out for you, because I remember that day on that show, and that was kind of when we put out whenever, you know, the full Communism record, and we're like first starting to do stuff. This is like the first kind of like show thing we ever did, and it was really fun. I remember we had the big audience there, and the video was really fun from that. And yeah, anyway, that was a great experience, and loved doing the show. It was a lot of fun, and loved the show. in terms of how this feels, I feel like when writing Downtown Boys songs or writing a lot of music, I do visualize how it's going to function with the band and with the live audience. So with Downtown Boys, would think about, you know, what Victoria is going to be doing on this, and the fact that we have like a horn or horn section and saxophones, and that we can kind of create, like you're saying, this like contained chaos in a certain way, and how that's going to work with an audience, and would sort of like, I think, visualize and like feel that energy a little bit. When I'm making this stuff with Leneve, you know, it feels a little bit different because I can kind of like picture myself and how I'm going to look, and like think of it in a slightly different kind of setting and what I can pull off with my current setup as a band. But I don't think it's that different, to be honest, in terms of like, you know, I'm writing down lyrics, you know, for the parts I've written for both bands. It does feel kind of similar. I feel like the process is quite similar, where I'll have some idea and then kind of like flesh it out and write it down more. I'm like putting ideas into logic and like layering things over each other. So I feel like the kind of like root process is actually quite similar. Sure. But then it's like the veneer that kind of comes out at the end ends up being a little bit different.
I love that you say that, just visualizing what it's going to be as live performance really informs it. You feel like that informs a huge part of your actual writing.
Yeah. Cause for me, that is the most fun part of being a musician, is playing it live, like by far. Like I like writing, I like recording. Like there's, you know, a beauty and a rhythm you can get into, and a kind of, I don't know, transcendental space you can get into with it. But it's like, it does still feel like work, and you're kind of like, you know, it can be slogging away in some ways. But when you're playing live, you know, you're entirely there. Even if it's a difficult show, you know, something's going wrong, you know, you're there, you're experiencing with people, you're creating this thing, you're absolutely in the moment. So for me, that's like kind of like the fully realized goal of what I'm doing, is to create this like beautiful thing that we can, you know, do with other people live. So I feel like I'm always kind of like keeping that somewhere in my head when I'm doing it.
Yeah. You know, it kind of makes sense, because I feel like with Downtown Boys, there was something very, very theatrical about it. And so it sort of makes it seem like that's part of your whole thing, is that you're also imagining like the theater of what it's going to be as a live performance. I think that's incredibly cool.
Yeah, we used to joke in the early, we don't actually believe this, but we always be talking like, people don't actually like music, they don't like hearing music, like it's about creating this like experience and spectacle for people and getting the energy out there. It's obviously not literally true, but you know, there's some grain of truth in it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess just a couple of last questions for you, Joey. Will there be any Leneve solo dates coming up, and what's in store for Downtown Boys, if anything?
So it playing some release dates. We're doing the like release party May 7th at Transpicos in Ridgewood, New York. We got like a show June 30th in Providence, play the day after in Cambridge. Trying to book some other stuff. So, you know, if you're listening to this and want to book stuff, I'm still putting it together, because touring's been such like a difficult thing to do. If you're like booking yourself right now, it's really hard. Everything's booked up, things even canceled. It's hard to like book a long tour, because you're like putting all this financial risk up and everything. So it's been hard. So I don't have like a ton booked right now, but yeah, trying to fill it up. So, you know, if you're listening, want to do something, hit me up. But we have those few things. Come to the release party if you're in New York, May 7th. We're going to be playing with Ratas and Zelo, or this great, great punk band in New York, and a friend, Agua Viva. Victoria is going to kind of like host it. We might have some surprises with Victoria from Downtown Boys. Our friend Jenny's going to DJ. It should be a really fun night. Downtown Boys, we don't have anything booked right now. We're looking at doing some stuff. We're definitely still like want to play, but we all do live in like different cities right now, so it's been, you know, it's expensive to like get together and like make things work. It's been hard with COVID, but yeah, you know, hopefully something comes together.
Well, there you have it. The new Leneve EP is out now. It's real cool. And actually, I said I was going to play one Leneve track and one Downtown Boys, but let's do two Leneve. So we opened with rough music. And how about we play History Solve right now? How's that sound, Joey?
Sounds great. That's we got a video for that one too. Check it out.
And also, I said it before, but there's a lot of cool Aneve stuff coming out. There's a double 7-inch, which is the new EP, and then there's the 12-inch re-release of A Vital Chord. So a lot of cool stuff coming out. Let's play the tune, and we'll be back, and we'll do the news. And we are back, and let's hit up some news. Kind of a slow news week this week, but you know, some bands and some stuff coming out. Let's talk about the first news story, which of course I have pulled up right here, and I can get to immediately. Devil Master, they're putting Devil Master. I had a conflict. I was going to go see Flipper with Fletcher of the Garden singing, and the Devil Master record release show was the same exact time and day, although the two venues were about 2 blocks from each other. But I, quote, got lucky because, sadly, Flipper has canceled their tour. So now I will be seeing Devil Master on the record release show. The new album is called Ecstasies of Never Ending Night, and that's out April 29. And the new single is called Shrines in Cinder. And more, I know you like to have your stuff. What's your perspective on the new Devil Master single? And I said that like a four-year-old, Devil Master. The Devil Master single. Devil, and more, what is your perspective on the new Devil Master single?
I thought it was really good. One thing that, you know, I just really like about the band is all the, like, the titles and stuff, because they all sound so, like, you know, like Shrines and Cinder, Black Acid Mass, like all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, it sounds really cool, just the name of it. And then the actual song was really good. It's more like, there's not a lot of vocals in it. And then when there are vocals, like they're very, like black metal vocals, and there's lots of kind of like you know, and stuff, and it just focuses on the instruments more. So just like there's so many like intricacies in like the guitar parts and in everything, and it's just, it's a really nice like not relaxing, but like kind of chiller listen, you know, and you get like an atmosphere sort of feeling, and it's good walking in the woods music.
The four people. Yes.
We are having trouble hearing you.
Yeah.
Okay. A Devil Master has shrunk from six people to four people and more. The result is the sound is, I guess there's more space in the sound. Like the first album was very cluttered, I think, by purpose. This one has more air in the music. What do you think of that?
I think it's still good because, well, like you can kind of have a little bit more of like the sparseness. It does still sound really like heavy. It does sound really like there, you know, like very, very present. So I think that that's just, it's helped them, you know.
Hallie Bull, I know you love this kind of music. What do you think of the new Devil Master single?
Well, you know, it's not exact. You guys know it's not exactly the kind of stuff I listen to. I don't have a lot to say about it, except that I did like it. I liked it better than I will sometimes like stuff that sounds like this. So I thought it was pretty cool.
Joey, what do you think of Devil Master? Interesting thing about Devil Master, a lot of bands these days that say, oh, we're Satanists or whatever, they mean LaVeyan Satanism, which is atheist, and it's really just using Satanism as a sort of, I guess, coat or whatever. However, Devil Master are theist Satanists in that they actually believe in Satan and they think he's a cool guy. Joey, what's your stance on Devil Master?
What does that mean in like a practical sense? Like what? to like actually... So not like the Church of Satan, kind of, they're just kind of like libertarians who want to kind of like test things. I don't know. I'm curious, you said they cut down from six people to four, because I was looking at pictures of six of them, and I see four. Are they dedicated characters? Like I see one, like do they always kind of do the same makeup and the same kind of like character? Like I like the theatricality of this, even though I don't know too much of this music, but do they have dedicated characters?
Well, they not like Gwar, where they're like actual characters, but they do have spooky names. However, the character itself evolves in that the makeup does change with each phase of the band, if you will. So kind of in between.
Oh, okay. It evolves. Okay, so they have like evolving characters. I like that. That's cool. I'm for that. I like that way more than, I don't know, more kind of like macho metal stuff that, you know, having the theatricality and the characters evolving, that seems cool. I mean, it seems like the sort of literal Satanism could get into weird territory, but maybe it's cool. I'd have to look into more what they're doing.
There you have it, Joey, with the succinct overall description of Devil Master. Here's something decidedly on the other side of the fence. John Doe of X has released a video for El Romanzo. That's off his new album, Fables in a Foreign Land, out May 20 via Fat Possum Records. And I'll kick this off. I've got a controversial opinion, frankly. Everyone loves X. Everyone's like, oh, X, they're the greatest. And the cool thing about X is they were a punk band and they did kind of a folk country kind of thing. I think X is the weakest band of that crop of punkers, you know, between Black Randy, the Metro Squad, the Germs, the Avengers, the Dills, the Skulls, the Eyes, Alice Bag. I think X is boring, and I think they're really boring when they go country. And what's even more annoying is sometimes when a band stops doing punk and they do something else, people are like, yeah, see, they're so punk that they don't even do punk now. They do something else. But what annoys me is they stop there. So I think it's I would argue that it's cool that John Doe and Exene and whoever else said, well, we're going to do country now. But that's where they stopped. They didn't keep progressing or doing weird things like F'd Up does, or like the Residents. It's like, all right, now we're just going to be John Cougar Mellencamp. And I actually think the song itself is okay, but I would not want to listen to 12 of these songs in a row. And honestly, if you can explain to me how this is different than John Cougar Mellencamp or even like James Taylor, I would like to know how. Hallie Bullitt, how is this different than Sweet Baby James, or I've Seen Fire and I've Seen Rain? How is it different?
I mean, it doesn't sound at all the same as those things to me. I mean, those things are kind of like, kind of, you know, like a pop 80s country. And this is, at least this stuff has more of like a folksy kind of a thing. I mean, it's definitely in the like folk and country tradition in that it's like about a cat. It's about a character. I mean, I wasn't in love with this song. That's not to defend it and say like, what are you talking? I mean, I actually probably would rather listen to a John Cougar Mellencamp song than this particular song, but I like other stuff off of this record a little better. I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen to some of the other stuff, but the first track on it is I know what it's called. Oh, it's called Never Coming Back. Did you listen to that one, John?
No, I listened to Boys of Summer, which I thought was, you know, put me in coach, I'm ready to go. I thought that was all right, you know.
I don't know. I wasn't sure what I thought about this track. I mean, the whole like El Romanzo, I don't know. And he had one of the guys. It's a little cornball, honestly. And he, I guess, had one of the guys from Los Lobos on this track, which is not clear from the video because I don't think that guy is in the video, right? I found the whole thing a little confusing, but I do think some of the other tracks off of this are better. They're just stronger. I think, I think Never Coming Back is good. Did you listen? You have to listen to the one that he did with, it's like a collaboration with him. Xene Cervenka's on it and Garbage. What's Shirley Manson from Garbage sings on it. And actually it's kind of interesting because the track is like, it's both going to be on John Doe's, it's going to be on this album, but it's also going to be on the, like the deluxe version of like the new Garbage album, which I thought was interesting. And that's also just kind of like worth taking a listen to. This, it just wasn't, I don't know. He's not a Spanish speaker, right? I mean, he's just like a guy from California, right? Does he have any Spanish speaking heritage? I don't know. There's something about it seems a little phony baloney to me, but something about this particular track seemed a little phony to me, but just to say, I like some of the other stuff a little better.
You feel as though he was doing an almost minstrel type show of the Spanish language, you feel, or a Spanish character?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't want to level that accusation. I haven't much about it, but yeah, just something about it didn't. I guess it just also, I don't know why this is. Do you guys find this like music? I expect it to like come from someone really like personally, and I don't enjoy music quite as much that is like where someone is telling a story that's very, very different or outside of themselves. Like I'm not, if I put on the Beatles, I'm not going to be listening to like Rocky Raccoon or like one of these like characters.
Oh, I love that
songs.
Song. I love Rocky Raccoon.
No. Don't, please don't make me listen to Rocky Raccoon. Like I just,
that song is like, so bizarre.
No, it's so weird.
I hate a character song.
Okay, right?
I hate the Kinks character song. I like some Kinks, but I hate the character songs. I can't do like, and then the butcher went like that shit. I can't do.
Okay, thank you. That's exactly what I'm saying. And why is it? Because when I go to the movies, when I go to theater, I'm happy to see people telling the story of like characters that are not themselves. But somehow when people do it in music, it just always seems so cheesy to me. I like can't go there. But Joey made me feel better about that because I don't know. I can't always go there with music. I don't know. John, what did you didn't like this. Em, what did you think of it?
I thought I was going to hate it. And I walked away just not liking it. So, you know, it's a step up, but it's not.
Wait, why did you think you were going to hate it? Why going into it were you like, oh, this is going to be like garbage?
I don't like, X is okay. I don't really like them. I don't listen to like his solo stuff. I don't really listen to much of that realm. I read a book about it and it was really interesting, but it was like none of it made me want to go out and like listen to the, you know, certain bands. I understand what they're doing with like the folky and the country thing. I don't really like that. He does have a good voice, like I will give him that, like he sounds good, like you know, he can sing, which is important.
He does, he's a singer. Right? For a but, guy that's like nearing 70 yeah. and is really best known as like the singer of like a punk band, like he actually really can, he can sing. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. Totally. No, not at all. No, he does. He can. Like, that was like the part that I liked about it was like, you know, if he was doing maybe a different style or a different thing, or yeah, like not a character. I don't like those. Just yeah, they don't click like at all. I didn't like the video. My favorite thing about the video is the upright bass, because I love upright bass, and it just, that was kind of the highlight.
I like that like weird pink, that. Pink and red suit. That like pink oh, yeah. and that like pastel pink and red suit was probably my favorite part of the video. There weren't a lot of other things that I loved about it.
that did look cool.
We should give John Doe credit for being, or it seems like he's kind of the only sort of not right-wing member of X, right? He's sort of the good member of X. From what I've listened to, it seems like he understands the world. and that Xian and the guitar player are both kind of right-wingers in like different ways. So I'm not sure how, you know, he's worked with them to make the last record and everything. But yeah, it seems like he's maybe the good member of X. I can at least give him that.
Yeah.
I would agree. I didn't quite buy this song. Like, I didn't quite buy the El Romanzo. You know, I don't know. It's not for me to say if, you know, he should or should not speak Spanish on this. I didn't buy it. I feel like it wasn't done convincing, but you know, I feel like he's being sincere here, and it seems like he's a sincere, good person, a good member of his band, but yeah, you know, didn't get too into it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of people that can speak Spanish, the Venomous Pinks have released a new single. The new single is called Apothecary Ailment, and it was filmed at Dutchman Park in Apache Junction, Arizona, and was shot by Alexander Thomas. It's off their upcoming album called Vita Moors. That's out June 3 via Sabam Records, and the band will be opening for, listeners can't see, but I'm doing this in quotations, the Dead Kennedys, in very heavy quotations. And more, Venomous Pinks, is this an M more approved band?
They get my stamp of approval, yes. Yeah, I think they're great. Like, they have a really, like, a great punk sound, and the vocalist, Drea Dahl, I love her voice, and she's like has that rasp. You know, like that, like, can do kind of nice, cleaner vocals and then punk, like, rasp sound, and it's great. The song, I really liked the song. Thought it was upbeat, and I like the, I wrote it down. One minute. Like, the whole thing of, like, looking forward and never give up, we'll find a way as part of the chorus. And I just think it's a nice, it's really good to have something like that, just have something like, yep, you know, you might have fallen off, you might have done this or whatever, but never give up, we're going forward, everything's gonna, you know, work out in the end. One thing that the band are doing too that I think's really neat, this video was shot in John, like you said, the park in Arizona, and their previous video for their first single, No Rules, was shot at the Yucca Tap Room, also in Arizona. So I think it's neat how they're like showcasing Arizona, you know, and really, because that's a part of who they are, like where they live, and then showcasing it and putting it in a really interesting light. So when they show like the park, like in the video, they're playing in the middle of the park. There's like cacti and all sorts of stuff. And it looks really, really cool. You know, it's like, what would Arizona be like, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, what did you guys think of the new Venomous Pinks song?
I wanted to like it. These women seem cool. I thought it was just a little, I don't know, it was a little too slick for me, something, a little too slick. Something about it seemed like a little cheesy. I liked the video. The video was beautiful. And like I said, they seemed talented and cool. It was like, there was just something about just the actual songwriting that didn't grab me. I don't know. What did you guys think of it? John Gentile, you're making such a skeptical face. Yeah, Joey, what did you think?
The reason I'm making a skeptical face is because I thought I was quoting John Cougar Mellencamp earlier, but I was quoting Don Henley. So this my reference made absolutely no sense whatsoever. But
I knew you were just I knew you were just sort of jarbling, like just lumping a bunch of 80s things that you didn't like into one giant thing.
It's fucked up, John. You're going to get so much hate mail from Henley heads.
Joe, what'd you think of Venomous Pinks? Now, Downtown Boys are decidedly rougher than, and even La Neve is decidedly rougher than the Venomous Pinks. This band a little bit more polished sound wise, if you will.
Yeah, we're much worse at singing, definitely, than they are. I love the video. I like that it, having been a person who shot many low budget videos on a dime, I feel like I can see how they shot this video. And I like that it's very, very 90s and has these very like particular 90s hard rock shots, like of her in that kind of like concrete room with the strobe light. But done, I think, like them, it has a very like DIY version of this like very classic 90s hard rock thing. I like that. I would agree that it's a bit slicker than what I usually listen to, but you know, they seem cool. I'm into the video, not gonna say anything, you know. Not going to make any criticism.
Well, one last story, and I don't think M or Joey or Hallie care about this whatsoever, but I care very deeply. Controversy in the world of integrity, and here's why. Integrity is, well, if the listeners don't know, I don't know. Hallie, do you know who integrity is?
No.
All right, so listen. Integrity is they were from Cleveland, but not really, but kind of. And it's fronted by a guy called Dwed Hellion. And the original formation had the Melnick brothers, Dwed Hellion, and a guy called Chubby Fresh. His real name, well, we don't know his real name. At any rate, so Integrity was really far out because they came out of the hardcore scene. But while all the hardcore guys were like, you know, we don't do drugs and we're going to unite and fight and do what's right tonight. Like Integrity, they were like dropping a bunch of acid and doing mushrooms and stuff and singing about how the universe doesn't exist and how you can go through time and space itself and also like Armenian persecutions and all and like how Satan is Jesus and Jesus is Satan and all these really far out, like super far out metaphysical things. And that's Integrity. And they really are the first band to do that after Cro-Mags, who of course also have a metaphysical bend as well. And I think Integrity is very much influenced by that mindset, if you will. At any rate, the first two albums have been remixed time and time and time again. How many times do you think the band's seminal, fantastic first album, For Those Who Fear Tomorrow, has been remixed? How many times do you think it's been remixed?
Five.
Let's count them up right now.
Seven.
So it has been, let's see, we've got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven remixes. This album has been remixed seven times. And the second album, Systems Overload, is kind of when the band went even more heavy metal than the first album. Both albums, the first album, For Those Who Fear Tomorrow, and Systems Overload, fantastic albums. Systems Overload, famously, the mix was not that good. And the reason for that is because, actually, this is a, well, it's not, I'll see if I can look it up after I finish talking about it, but Integrity was signed to the infamous Victory Records. And when they recorded their first album, they had a budget of like $500. And the sound engineer felt bad for them because he thought they were a cool band. So it gave them a few extra days to make their album. The second time for Systems Overload, they got the same budget. And the guy like didn't want to give them extra days because he felt that the label, Victory Records, was kind of using his goodwill to not pay more. So the guy's like, listen, you paid for like $500 or whatever. That's what I got to give to you. So the second album, Systems Overload, famously has not a great mix. About 7 years ago or 6 years ago, it was remixed as Systems Overload A2 or Remix. And frankly, that remix is one of the best remixes ever in that it really took a great album that had a mediocre sound and made it a great album with an amazing sound. So, I mean, I thought, and I think everyone thought, that the new A2/or mix was the definitive version of System Overload. It was so much better sounding than the original version. This new version, the third version of Systems Overload, is kind of between the two, and this is the one mixed by frontman Dwed Hellion. So it kind of sounds like the original version, which sounds radically different than the A2 War mix. That being said, so we've got three, much like Heartbreakers, LAMF record. There's like four mixes of all these albums, and we're like, no, the first one's the best. No, the third one's the best. It's like, and they're all, well, I guess actually it's not. With Heartbreakers, all the mixes are basically the same. With the Integrity mixes, they're pretty radically different. But even more so, the remix of the first album, For Those Who Fear Tomorrow, is incredibly different because the original drums of Chubby Fresh, who Dwayne Hallion does not like at all, and he doesn't like the, honestly, like they were kind of like beefing literally for like 20 years until it finally kind of petered out. So they, on the new version, they replaced all of Chubby Fresh's drums with Igor Cavalera of Sepultura and Brandon Gallagher of Trace Amount. So they literally, it's a remix except for it's got brand new drum tracks. I listened to it, and if I'd never heard the album before, I would say okay. But it really, like I think Dwed's an amazing artist, and I don't know why they did this. Maybe it was a financial thing, and I know more than most people, you know, if you don't form an LLC as a band early on, it can cause you a lot of problems going forward later on. So maybe there's a problem there. Or maybe the tapes were bad, or maybe just because they hate each other so much, they just wanted to give it new drum tracks to get the guy out of the field. This, of course, and more, this harkens back to a similar move by an extremely famous heavy metal singer. Do you know the reference?
No, not off the top of my head.
Ozzy Osbourne in the 90s remixed his first two albums, and they removed all the bass and drum parts and left only Ozzy and Randy Rhoads, who was dead, so he couldn't sue. And they recorded all new drum and bass parts with a studio musician, and it sounded terrible. It sounded like real bad. And people were so mad that Ozzy and Sharon backtracked on their stance, which they never, ever do because it was so bad. I wouldn't say this is bad. I would just say it's different. And so as someone who knows this album, almost backwards and forwards, it does kind of stick out. I guess I could get used to it. I don't think any of these remixes are necessary, except for the fact that they're all out of print. I mean, these records go out of print every 5 years, so they're back in print. And I guess you could argue that it's kind of cool to remix them every time they go back in print, just to give listeners something a little different each time, I guess. So it really, I mean, honestly, for me, the Systems Overload remix, the H-War remix, is always going to be the definitive one. It's so much better than the original one. And I guess the most recent, For Those Who Fear Tomorrow, to me, just sounds so great. The one on Magic Bullet is fantastic. I don't see a need to remix it. But Joey, I don't know if you're a record collector and you like to compare mixes and stuff. Should artists go back and rework the material, or is that verboten?
Personally, I hate listening to my music, and I feel like when I do hear it, I just do that in my brain. I'm like, remix. I'm like, oh, this, you know, the vocal track is too loud. This needs so. But I think you have to resist. You have to say it's done. It's out there. Move on. Go to the next thing. Because personally, I feel like I drive myself insane for forever doing that kind of stuff. When you first started talking about this, I was like, oh, this is kind of like hilarious in a way. I kind of like that they're doing this. But then you mentioned the business side of it. And that I feel like that has very dark possibilities, because you see, you know, shit like Spotify buying up old catalogs from artists, and, you know, these big companies buying up rights from different artists. And it seems like there exists a possibility of them like re-recording records, like you were saying, with different musicians, so they can like cut people out of the royalty scheme, because they're already kind of doing that shit. Like, you know, Spotify has like fake artists they put at the top of their playlists, especially like the chill and ambient playlists and that kind of stuff. So they're kind of doing that. So I think there's some sinister possibilities here that might need to be considered. Pass House just funny.
Hallie, but do you have a perspective on Dwayne Hallion being a weird guy and a fantastic musician that plays hardcore and metal and trips out on acid all the time and sings about how reality doesn't exist?
Do you think that I have a lot to say about that? Because I do not. But I will say that I'm with Joey. I mean, there are definitely, except that I kind of come around the other side of it as an artist. There's songs that I've done and albums that I've done where I just feel like the mix is so poor that it actually prevented the song from like being able to grab people in the way that I feel it should have. And so you have to be doing it for the right reasons, but I do like the idea of a band putting something out and then maybe years down the road, they have more resources or a little more money or just more people care about it. And they're able to go back and fix the things that always like made them cringe and like listening to their own songs. So there's something, as an artist that's never been able to do that, there's something very gratifying to me about that. Like some artists have been able to do that. And especially hearing you say that there's such a huge difference between with that one album, like with the original, and then when they remixed it the first time. I mean, it's just, that's awesome. It makes me want to go listen to both of them back to back just to hear what you're talking about, you know, to hear how different it is.
Well put, and more. It seems like I'm being crucified by both Joey and Hallie for saying things should be left as is. What's your perspective?
I think if it's, well, like, as a listener, I think if it's absolutely necessary to remix it, then go for it. Like, you know, if it was recorded in such a way, like you can't hear, like you can't make out the lyrics and that's not intentional, where like everything kind of becomes like sludge, you know, and again, that's not intentional, then I think a remix would be in order. But I don't, overall, like, if an album that I like or own has been remixed, I usually don't buy it or really listen to it because it's like I have it. I have, you know, the audio that I like. You know, I might check out a couple of things, but in the majority of cases, it's just like if it, you know, it's all good. But with this stuff, I thought it was kind of cool because the person that got to remix it, the Arthur Risk, he did Power Trip stuff. It's just, that's really cool. So, yeah.
The podcast that I was referring to where Dwed talks about having to rush the recording was I Don't Want to Hear It, episode 161, I think. At any rate, Joey of Downtown Boys, Joey of La Neve, thanks for coming on the show. People should check out La Neve at laneve.music.bandcamp.com. The new EP is coming out real soon, and the re-release of Vital Cord is coming out real soon. Anything that you want to listeners to check out or listen to or think about as your closing words, Joey?
Check out the album. Kind of just what you just said. Check out the record. Tell me what you think. Come see us at Transpecos May 7th. It should be a lot of fun. And thanks for having me. This was actually a blast to hang out with you three tonight. So thanks.
That was awesome. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks.
Well, Joey, thanks for coming on. People definitely from the New York area, go see La Neve live. Especially, I've never seen La Neve full band, so that's probably really, really cool. Go check that out. And let's close it out with a Downtown Boys song. Joey, I know that the new La Neve album is called History Solves. So how about we play Downtown Boys Wave of History to send them on out?
Yeah.
Do it. Very related song.
And we'll see y'all next week.